ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, give a big round of applause wherever you are in the world for Kissy Salad.
We're going to play a short clip. You just literally plus played the video. That's great. That's
got man, listen.
You know, the funniest thing about that intro is well, you know, it's a prodigy, right? It's not really the prodigy. I had to replay it. I replay it so I didn't get a copyright strike. So I can put that on.
If I'm honest, yours sounds better.
Oh, shut up. No, it's not.
Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good, actually. I think you've caught me in a good week, actually. I'm feeling slightly more chipper now. Okay. It's because it's been funny, you know, but like, you know, God, you know, it's over a year now of not having a job anymore, basically. But I think, you know, it's ups and downs. I think I was in denial for the first few months. It's not really denial. We just kind of just thought, okay, it's all right. So I'm just a temporary thing.
Yeah,
you'll go away. Do some more, you know, streaming videos and stuff. And then it carries on. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, my son turned two. Now he's three. It's pretty mad. But there you go. Yeah, I've been quite chipper at the moment, to be honest with you. Oh. It's nice talking to you.
Say that again?
It's nice talking to you.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, Calvin said to me, I think I can get Kissy to come on your show. I was like, you're joking. Really? Because my experience of you, we've never met before, by the way, so the listeners understand. Yeah. My first experience with you was in 2012 on the Pioneer stand at BPM at the NEC.
Oh, right. Oh, one of those guys. Okay, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I used to quite well at those, didn't I? Do you know what's funny about that is it's quite nervous. It's very nervous. I get nervous with these things anyway, but the crowd are just like, they're right there. And people just stand completely silent and just look over you when you're doing stuff. And then you walk off and it's probably just like, you know, because people get, you know, nervous around, you know, me in that situation. But you know, no one says anything. So you walk away from the interview and you're like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I made a pretty jamming mistake at the start. But apart from that, you know what I mean? But, you know, own your mistakes and stuff. You know, it's all the performance, isn't it? So
I stood and watched you for 20, 25 minutes and I was... I said that my son was with me as well, and he was at the time was a budding disc jockey.
And hopefully now he's got a job lined up as an engineer or something like that. That's when they actually earn money.
Yeah, he works for Apple now, so he's all right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he does, yeah. So I was like, right, okay, where's this? Because I'd not seen you before. So I was like, where's this going to go? Because I didn't know whether you were going to play records or whether you were going to mix or scratch or what you were going to do. And you did everything. You did everything and more that we could. Just listen, I am a massive fan, right?
I very much appreciate it. I mean, you know, I'm not Tom Cruise or anything, but yeah, it's no, I do appreciate it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I try very hard. So it is genuinely nice. I mean, I think one of the things I definitely, you know, because, you know, Lord knows I've had a whole year of being able to think retrospectively about things. Yeah. But like, I've always been like very pure about stuff. As in, I've always taken stuff like completely seriously and really gone for it. Like, because I've never, you know, this is a thing that I dreamed of doing when I was younger and I just couldn't. The thing is, of course, I look back now and I think, oh, you know, of course I became a DJ. I mean, it's that you know, if you practice every single day doing something and you get really good at it, then it's, no matter how much you know, how self-conscious and shy I used to be, you know, eventually, you know, these things happen. But that's why I love it. I love it, you know, to be honest with you, because it's,
So how did it start for you? Every day
again. You know, I thought you only wanted me on for half an hour. I'm not going to be able to explain all of this.
Well, every day that's been on, we've asked them how they started from somebody started as a mobile DJ. I did, Pat Sharp did, but then some people just go straight into clubs and that. How was it for you? What was the jump off point for you?
First of all, it was records. You know, it's difficult to whittle this down into a short little summary. But I mean, I guess the crazy thing about it was that when I was about 20, I was still 21, and basically my life just changed in 2 weeks. And it was because practicing making tunes and DJing in my bedroom by myself. I had no friends that were interested in dance music at all, nothing. But I used to buy the, you know, Mr. Sound magazine, I used to buy Mix Mag magazine. I covered up my walls with pictures and stuff. And then I went off to art school, hoping I'd, in London, hoping I'd make you know, meet people that I had things in common with. And to my absolute, you know, dismay, no one at art college was interested in music either. But I was very ambitious when I was younger. I really wanted to, like, it wasn't so much I thought I was due for good things or anything. If anything, I was frightened that I, you know, that I wouldn't have it in me and I just, you know, I wouldn't be able to do anything with my life. But, that exact feeling gave me the, you know, the inspiration to try really, really hard. So I actually used inheritance money. You know, I got to give it a, you know, I've had to think about £500 or something off my grandma just before she died. And I used it to, and I printed some records and I was already getting played on, well, no, oh, was that happening just yet? No, MySpace was the big thing that was starting to kick off.
Yeah.
And I just printed my own records and then I... which is, you know, I mean, it's a miracle that even worked out. So I didn't know what I was doing. And I couldn't ask anyone. And, you know, it's funny that these days as well, you can just look it up, can't you?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Really,
you didn't have Wikipedia back then. So it was, I mean, you know, there's a lot of more in this story, but to cut a long story short, my life changed in 2 weeks. I mean, I basically kind of, you know, became a famous DJ pretty quickly, but that's because you know, that's better when you get paid for remixes, of course.
Yeah,
so absolutely. So the fact that I was trying so hard and I'd made these demos and stuff, which well, you know, I mean, it's you know, listen, I'm you know, I'd love to be a genius. I think I'm quite a few steps away from being a genius. But what I will say about my early work is that it was very, like, it sounded very different from what was other music that was popular at the time. And I think that was purely because I didn't know anyone else who made music, basically. So I just obsessed away at my own thing and it probably created a feedback loop and I ended up with my own sound. And I think that was quite a crucial thing, I guess, cutting through the scene. And because, of course, I wanted it, it meant that I would just make a tune in a day. You know, I make a tune in a day. And when I got, you know, asked to remix, I think it was All Saints was the first one.
Yeah.
I did that in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
And then the same week I got offered to do a remix with Mark Ronson.
Okay.
And, you know, but the thing is, I was still, you know, a 21-year-old living with his mum. I did that in a day. So, and then the next thing I know, these things come out of records and then they're on compilation albums and, yeah, it's just history really. But it's quite a bonkers time. It's a long time ago now. But it's quite crazy. Things have changed. The world has changed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I worry now that you'll hear less stories like that because you know what I mean? I mean, cause I that's an example of me just nervously, literally forcing myself to go outside my house and, you know, to try and get some record stores to take some of my records off me and, you know, trying to write emails to other DJs and stuff and do you know what I mean?
What was your first gig? What was the first gig you played in terms of being a, you know, being a named DJ?
It's a funny thing because it's, I mean, this is why when I say my life changed in 2 weeks, what it literally means is that I mean like zero to quite a substantial level. And so like my first, you know, my first time in Fabric was been like, I think headlining room two, I think. Well, it wasn't room one, but I think it would have been headlining room two. I'd you know, I was first gig in London was doing T Bar, which is quite doesn't exist anymore, but it's a big pizza restaurant now. But that was a big like 2,000 capacity club in Shoreditch. Yeah. And my first time in there, I was headlining, so that was crazy. And then only a year later, I was doing main stages in Australia.
Wow,
stuff like that. So no, it was bonkers. But and again, though, the degree of separation, the fact I hadn't been kind of, I don't know, I didn't. Groom's not the right word, but I hadn't been encouraged or mentored by anyone.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you know, commenting on my mixing style earlier, I mean, the reason that I got quite a frantic mixing style is because, first of all, I care a lot and I want it to be, you know, I want it to sound amazing. Do you know what I mean? That's often why I don't do a mix for a while is because it takes a long time to come up with something that I think is actually, like, it's got to be amazing. It can't be, you know, it's got to have, you know, give you a shiver and, you know, have that kind of impact and stuff. I love it as well. I love it if it's like that. It's, I struggle if, you know, sometimes I hear, like, see, you know, DJs just having a jam. And I think that's quite cool, but like you'll never see a video of me just having a jam because that's not really. Do you know what I mean? I want to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Every time I see you, no matter where, it is maximum effort, man. It is.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was discussing this with someone this afternoon. I told him you were coming on the show. And we were talking about how much you use the equipment that you've got. I mean, I've got a set of reins here, right? And I kind of, start, you know, cue. And I do what I got to do. But man, you literally use every button there is to use, from samples to loops. And it's a joke. The thing is, though, mate, when the sort of DJs that I work with, and there, you know, there's a lot of great ones. There's a few bad ones, but there's a lot of great ones.
Yeah, well, every now and again, you see a really good.
Yeah,
and I think it's wicked.
The level that you operate on it is completely. It's just a different level. You, Jags.
Well, it's very intense. Yeah, no, I mean it's very intense. It's It's because I get so nervous. I mean, as well.
Oh, really?
I've been saying this for years. But when people get surprised by that, I'm like, of course I get nervous. Like, it's my favorite thing to do. Of course I get nervous. If I care about how it sounds. I care if it's a good night or not. You know, if I see someone have a rubbish night or something like that ruins my night. I don't want that to happen. So I want people to have a good time. You can even say maybe a little bit, you know, kind of selfishly, because I can't have a good night unless I know I've actually done a decent job. And so that does create a pressure, I guess. But it does become second nature. Yeah, it's nice you say all the stuff about the mixing. I guess you're not wrong with any of that. But there's a lot of counting that I do. That's what a lot of things happen. And I think that a big step in my like DJ style, I think, which was an important step, was there was a lot of almost like signature moves that I became known for doing, but which just originated from nervousness. They were just to do with nervousness. So like, for instance, I used to get so anxious before shows that, I mean, I'd struggle to look up, you know what I mean? I struggled to look up at the crowd, but I knew I had to, but I'd just really, really struggle. And I found this way where I could look just above people's heads and they'd think I was looking at them, but I wasn't actually. And it's not a rudeness thing or anything, but I mean, it's because I was so shy. And,
I was look at the where I used to work. I used to work in a place called the Dome, and at the back of the room is a big mask on the wall, and the manager used to say to me, "Where in the first time I worked there, he said, just look at that mask, just look at that mask." He keeps looking down too much.
That's not bad advice,
I don't know what I'm doing, but you're right. You have to find a focal point and go for it.
Yeah, but it kind of creates, and you know, little tricks like that, of course. I realised that if you constantly are looking slightly above people's heads, then even if you're a DJ in, you know, quite an empty club, people feel as if there's people behind them, almost. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And then you end up, so just a gesture with your eyes, you end up filling up the club for someone in the face sort of way. And all that nervous energy as well, I'd be so scared of making a mistake at the start of my sets that I would pace around all the time. Yeah. But then what would happen is that I would kind of look like a bit like a boxer when I came out. And it wasn't intentional, but there was this nervous energy. And I think it used to be really, people used to feed off it. And I think, it's cool. I mean, trust me, a fair few load of DJs didn't like that I used to do that because it used to make them nervous too. But it's a happy accident, but I guess. But, you know,
that's your thing, man. That's your thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, not that it's, you know, it's not the, you know, it's not the thing to do to get money anymore or anything like that. But, you know, I've given it a good run. I'm really pleased, actually, especially when you've got like a year where, you know, it's just been odd. The whole life's just been strange. We're all locked indoors. It's nice that I do still love it, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long time now. Do you know what I mean? I'm 36 now. Like, it's been a long time. And my only career in my entire life has been a professional DJ.
You never done anything else?
No, it's no, but I mean, it's not, you know, but it's you know, whether I'm relevant or not is a different question, but I mean, I definitely still enjoy it, and I think maybe perhaps it's the enjoying it bit, it probably counts for a lot more, maybe.
Yeah, you got to enjoy it, it can't be. I don't, every DJ that I know that kind of slogs through it, they don't last long, they just.
Yeah. And it is a funny one, because there might be people watching this who are like, you know, what DJs are those? But to be honest with you, that's the majority. I know I've kind of been jealous of them sometimes. These people that they just walk on like the stage, they're not really bothered. Like, it's cool that, you know, they get several girls' phone numbers while they're doing it. And, I mean, it must be lovely to be like that.
Okay. So here's my question. How did you go from, obviously, you did the remixes and stuff, and And it was interesting going discog in your back catalogue is very interesting. There's some great stuff in there. But my question to you is, how did you go from that to getting on Radio 1? Tell me that.
Oh, God. These are all, yeah, going back with these questions, isn't we? Well, I mean, it's going to be an anticlimax. But I mean, I just got talent spotted. It was as simple as that. I just got talent spotted. And arguably, I guess that's what, you know, they were supposed to do. Supposed to find someone like me, I guess. But, you know, I did two demos. I didn't get the first one. But I had to do a second one about a month later. So it was quite, it wasn't like I really fluffed it or anything. It was strange, though. I remember making the first demo for it because I didn't even listen to Radio 1. So it was a bit odd. So I didn't really know what to do. And I think I tried to tell some funny stories about when, about my mates in university or something. Oh, I can't remember what I was doing. But it was very different when I actually got there because it was it's just the amount of people that you're broadcasting to. I mean, it's crazy, and it's palpable. You feel it in the room. The producers feel it in the room as well. You're aware that it's a big deal. You know, you're also aware that you can't swear. You know, because it would be awful if you swore. You know, there's half a million people listening. You know, it's crazy, and so that pressure was electric. It was same as about, being about to walk on stage, I guess, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Didn't do much of my personal life for all the years I was at Radio 1, though. But as in, what I mean by that is, like, you know, it's, you know, it's not, I'm not grandstanding too much here. I don't sound too arrogant.
This is what it's about, mate. This is what it's about.
But I did, my show was very theatrical on Radio 1. It had lots of classical music and opera things at the start, which of course it was done because I knew it was so unusual to do it. And it was also difficult to do. And it took a long time to put 2 hours of music, man. I mean, in fairness, I got sent a lot of tunes and I still do to this day, actually, which is quite funny. It's it's quite funny. I still get about 250 emails a day easily. Wow. And it's all music. But if anything, it's a bit of a shame because it makes it genuinely difficult. I ended up buying most of my records still because it's, and then later on, I'll like someone's tune and then I'll kind of look up their name. And then occasionally I check my own emails and realize that I was sent that tune a while ago. So it is a bit of a shame that I can't, but going back to Radio 1, it was, yeah, it was great. I mean, the effort that it sounded like was really special. It is what it took to do that, and so it was. And we did a sound check, didn't we, before we did this video? Yeah. And I was going to say that it reminded me because like I always wanted people when they listen to any radio show I would do or anything. I had this picture of them like imagining me like looking really cool, like wearing some cool clothes and kind of dancing down some corridors of vinyl records everywhere. But that wasn't really how it was done. Of course, it was just me sitting at a computer, right, at 7 in the morning on a Thursday. Do you know what I mean? Thursday morning, just pressing spacebar over and over again. That's what really was going on.
you say about the hard work that went into the show and it was a good show. I was sad when it stopped. I was disappointed because it was one of them shows. It's a bit like Annie Nightingale a little bit. It kind of, you wanted it to just carry on forever. Do you know what I mean?
People did get very obsessed with it. I mean, it was wonderful. Yeah. But of course, I think the thing that, people like yourself wouldn't then have seen was a lot of it got carried out of the, I mean, as in it came on the road with me. I mean, it was, I just did tour after tour after tour. We're starting with tours where I was doing, four gigs a week and then it quickly was, kind of 10 gigs a week or something like that.
Wow.
And it was bonkers. But as I said, it's nice to talk. I feel a bit funny even talking about it, but because I don't acknowledge it. I often just carry on with the next thing. I don't really think about it, but that's just, it's just because I just really tried really hard, but it was cool. But I mean, I must admit, when I left radio, I was a bit of relief, to be honest with you, because it was a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
I was still, because I've changed a lot now, I've kind of got a bit more confident and stuff. But back then I used to be incredibly shy and that added to the nervous energy and stuff. I think it was funny. I was probably a bit over the top like meeting me because I was just so nervous all the time. And I think a lot of people got, like Radio 1, as well. Like, got slightly, probably got slightly the wrong impression of what I was actually like, to be honest with you, because I was, because I think, as I said before, this, oddly, this, a lot of my nervousness and stuff came across as that supreme confidence, you know, which wasn't really what was happening at all. It was just that I was, you know, if I knew the answer, I'd immediately say, I know the answer. You know, it was because I was nervous about getting it wrong. That was what it was. But there you go. No, but it's cool. But I mean, yeah, also, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't leave the country much when I was at Radio 1. So it was, so I immediately did, you know, Japan and, South Africa and, USA as well. I've told the USA about 11 times.
Wow.
So that's, yeah. So it's, yeah, it's cool. That's why it's a bit odd going back to these quite old memories, really, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So what about now then? Where are you? Obviously, up until lockdown. Talk to me about the year before lockdown had started, and where were you? What were you doing? And what have you done through lockdown to prepare for the other side?
Yeah, well, it's a funny question, isn't it? I mean, I think that's why I said I'm a bit, do feel at least a bit more chipper this week, because it's I feel like the end is beginning to be in slight. Yeah. And I mean, but to be honest with you, I've got a son. Who, as I said, just turned two at the start of the lockdown, but now he's three. And so I had to downscale a bit when he was born. But actually, so the year before lockdown, it was kind of, I was building things back up again. I mean, I was beginning to, I had loads of records planned to come out and stuff, which still haven't come out now, and I don't know what to do with them because and that's the odd thing, because you're stuck at home. I don't really, it's... Yeah, I mean, I'm keeping myself busy. I'm making tunes every single day and stuff, but it's there's no like outcome or anything for these things. At the end of the day, if you can't leave the house, it's just all a bit, strange as well. And you can't even meet your mates to play them your tune and see what they think of it. Right. Do you know what I mean? I was doing all that, and then I think I had a gig with Judge Jules literally the day before the lockdown happened. I mean, literally the day before. I mean, like, it was. And that's when we all thought we were going to die as well. We all thought we were going to die, didn't we? It was the end of the world. So, like, it was kind of people were disinfecting the train. I was the only one on the train, all that sort of stuff. Lockdown happened the next day. Haven't worked since.
So what is your plans for, you know, have you got anything booked in? I know there's the phone's been fairly busy here with people, you know, getting September, October, November kind of organised, loosely organised.
Well, this year?
Yeah, they don't want to, they're like...
Oh, mate, that's nothing. I've got bookings in May. I mean, as in I say that, like, I felt a bit odd about it when I first heard about it. I was like, mate, what do you mean, May? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's because that's another funny thing that happens is a lot of people. It took a while, I think, for the music industry to realise that maybe, you know what I mean, maybe we should back off for a bit because this is actually a bit more serious than we all thought it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had a lot of gigs cancelled to the point where you just like future bookings and stuff. But the point where you start not to believe they're going to happen anymore, and that's why it does feel slightly better that I've got a socially distanced gig in May. It's not kind of a proper. I don't really know what that means, but it's for Golden in I can't remember the name of the place. I think it's Stoke on Trent, but I'm not sure. But anyway, they're lovely, cool people. But that's socially distanced, and then I've got a proper one in after. In the June, but I'm a bit nervous to say because I to be honest with you, by the end of June, I don't think this will have ended by
June. So. I was really lucky to play 9 weeks of in September when they did Eat Out to Help Out. I played 9 weeks at the Jam in Birmingham, and man, it was the weirdest thing because no one could dance, they couldn't sing, So I, as a DJ, you're trying to not play records that get people excited, but then...
It's like background music.
Yeah, totally. And so, you know what I did? I switched to music videos. I started playing music videos just to keep... And they had a band on that was behind a screen and it was just the weirdest. So
behind a screen?
It was mad. Oh,
that is crazy. Odd, isn't it? Why have a band? Okay, put a CD on. I don't know. Okay, fine.
They were all sat and eating and all that. So it was kind of, they could watch the band and then watch me playing music videos. It was weird, but it kind of worked. But for me, I'm like you. I get excited and I start jumping around and I was like, this is really weird. But
yeah, well, I mean, things still are weird. I mean, it's not, but
I think it's going to be weird till after Christmas, mate, honestly.
Oh, I think it might be weird longer than that, to be honest with you. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, a lot of stuff I've been doing is, it's nice to do this video actually, because it has forced me to put a camera on, turn it on, and actually sit here and take, and essentially to kind of let people see what my studio looks like. Because I've been working on my, I'm working on this room. Because of course I'm stuck with my partner and kids all the time. And obviously I love them. They're the best things in my life. Like, obviously I love them. But like, it's funny how, do you know what I mean? I've spent, you know, all of my adult years since university sitting in a soundproof room playing very loud music all the time. When my son's here during the day and stuff, I mean, you can't do it. So I've struggled a bit with the creativity, but I've been working on stuff, and I've got this new mixing desk, and I've got good stuff going on. So I've been working on some tutorial videos, some production tutorial videos, things that we're going to start coming out soon. And I'm doing some tech reviews for a tech review website called DJ Tech Reviews. And what's the other thing I'm doing? I'm not sure if I'm going to say this actually. But I don't think maybe people are okay. But I'm also maybe doing some stuff with Pioneer again as well, which is
cool. Oh wow!
And it's been a little while actually, because I've obviously done a lot of stuff with Pioneer.
Yeah, well that was on my list. The Pioneer thing was on my list because I was going to say, where did that start and stop? Because that was when I first saw you in the flesh.
Yeah, I guess so. So, do you know, I went to a lot of people that don't know this, but like when like they see something that says, "Oh, Kissella helped with the designer for the Nexus 2 series of stuff," like that's true to such an extent that I actually went to Japan. I think it's Karateki or something, and I met like the head of Pioneer. They put up a British flag for me. It was crazy. Couldn't believe it. And I met all of like the engineers and stuff. They all gave me a business card, and it was a wonderful experience. God, it was so crazy. I got shown the blueprint and stuff. They couldn't speak much English, but I was incredibly grateful to be there. But that was all absolutely amazing stuff. And it's weird because it's been quite a few years now, and technology is so different now. Yeah. That sounds like a vague thing to say, but like, you know, just with all the stuff behind me, for instance, I mean, a lot of these things didn't exist. Like, they didn't exist when I was making music back in the day. I've turned into one of those guys, haven't I? Who's like, oh, it's not like it used to be in the old days. But I'm the opposite, as in, I love all this new stuff now. Like, the stuff you can do now is crazy. Like, the stuff you can do, you know, although oddly, I find it harder to make like mental music than I used to, which I think is probably a contribution of factors. But I think arguably when you can do anything, it's quite hard to do something. Blimey, that's a bit of a truth nugget.
I have some fewer questions here.
Yeah, go on. Really? Are these made up or are these real?
No, seriously. And you know what? He sent them to me on the iPad because I didn't want to interrupt your flow by messing with the screen.
So, all right.
Mike James, who's is an old school DJ boy, and he wants to know what do you have on your rider when you do big gigs? What do you have on your rider?
Is he asking that because he knows the answer?
No, I don't think he does. But I think he's.
Let me tell you a story. So make yourself comfortable. No, just do a short version. No, there used to be like, again, you know what? Though, I prefaced a lot of things saying about my life and saying that. You wouldn't believe the how many silly things that may have come across, you know, perhaps in quite a confident way during my career, were actually due to just total naivety and a bit of nervousness and you know, and the rider relates to that because when I so I get signed up to a big DJ agency, didn't I? After you know, like it's I had this wicked Irish agent who took me on right at the start of my career, and then. Called Nuala, and she was fantastic. And then I got, you know, before I knew it, I was with Billy Morris and stuff. And they sat me down. They said, "Kissy, listen, we need to talk about your rider." I said, "What's a rider?" They go, "Well, it's you're not expected to buy your own drinks at a gig." And I was like, "Oh, really? Oh, okay, that's cool." And they're like, "Okay, so we need to know what drinks you want." And I said, "Well, what are the options?" They said, "Listen, because we can't talk about this all day. What's your favourite drink? If you want that, then they'll have it there." And I went, "What, my favourite drink?" And I was like, "Do you know what I mean?" 22 years old, from Essex. I was like, "Watermelon Bacardi Breezer." Obviously, Watermelon Bacardi Breezer. They went, "Okay, yeah, fine." Anyway, but my point is, that was the end of the conversation. I didn't realise that was going to haunt me for the next 10 years, that little decision, where it even got to the point when, as I said, I went to Japan and they had to import some. I mean, when I say they had to import some, they didn't have to import some. I wouldn't have cared less. I could not have cared less if they didn't have any Bacardi Breezes. If anything, I probably had so many Bacardi Breezes that I'd gone a bit off them, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? But it just followed me around, this thing about Bacardi Breezes, which is why I wondered if you knew the answer to that question. No, but apart from that, I mean, you know, it's fine. It's I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, you turn up to do a good show, and you know, if I ask for loads and loads and loads of wacky stuff. Then A, I probably wouldn't get booked again because that's how things really work in the real world. But second of all, it would make me more nervous because I'd know that they'd done that thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's, yeah. I did a gig in Cambridge once, right, where this guy, I think he said, this is another thing that used to happen, which was I had a tour rider for my tours, right? And yeah. Which is different, very different from like a DJ rider, right? Because DJ riders, that's just a few drinks, like for me, do you know what I mean? A tour rider was completely different. It had food on it and stuff. And that was because it wasn't just for me. It was for other people in the crew. It was for the other DJs that came away with us. If we had a band, it was for people in the band. It was a big old thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But sometimes it would get sent to the clubs that I was DJing at, especially if it was midway while I was on tour. And, you know, luckily, most of the time, people had a bit of common sense about it and thought, well, okay, this is, we've obviously been sent the wrong document because there's no way I can get all this stuff. But I did take one gig in Cambridge once and it was empty. It was totally empty, mate. It was totally empty. But this guy, bless him, I don't know why he did this. I don't know why he did this. It had like fruit juice and stuff in it. So it said like, you know, cranberry juice or something, orange juice. He had decanted all of the juice cartons, right? So you got your cranberry juice. You got it all. You got it all, Pete. You got everything, right? You got orange juice, you got apple juice, you got cranberry juice, you got, do you know what I mean? You can have it all. And he decanted it all into like jugs, right? So he'd opened it all. There's no one here. There was no one there. There was no one at the gig. There was the empty dance floor was empty. It was, do you know what I mean? I mean, arguably, if he spent as much time promoting the gig as he had unpacking the rider.
Working on your rider.
But as I said, it just makes you feel nervous and you just feel bad. Do you know what I mean? You turn up and you're just like, oh, man, I mean, it's bad enough that the gig's empty because I've got to say, thank goodness, but, like, you know, I haven't had that many, you know, kind of empty gigs, actually, to be honest with you, but although I've had some bad ones, but you said I wasn't allowed to swear on your show, so I'll have to tell you that another time, I'm afraid.
That is my list here, right? So, best and worst gig, so...
No, I can't. Yeah, mate, my worst gigs are so bad. My number one worst gig, which I'm not going to tell you about here, it's not the right tone, it's not the right place all the time. My worst gig ever is so bad that at the end of the story, when I tell people, they go, that's actually awful. And I'm like, yeah, no, that is actually awful. And I can tell you that my second worst gig ever was when we did a live band show. I was in front of 6,000 people and I walked out onto stage and someone threw a glass bottle at my head and it hit my head.
Wow.
Just as I walked out on stage and it was a full bowl. And so what that meant was that it landed upside down. So it not only did it hit me in the face, it emptied all over my shirt, right? 6,000 people you're in front of, right? That'll do it. If everyone wondered why I haven't got much of an ego, that'll be why. And the thing is now you've got to do the show still, haven't you? I mean, a lot of people wouldn't do the show if that happened, but I mean, I've never been that kind of person. But I mean,
I remember
the drummer actually asked if we wanted to finish early, that one. Yeah. She thought it was so bad. I was like, you know. But that's not my, yeah, but suffice to say, I've had much worse gigs than that. But they're good, you know, it's good experiences because you look back on these things and, you know, now I'm a dad and stuff and I was so terrified about becoming dad. But actually, all the things that have happened to me, it was so accelerated, like within the 10-year space. I kind of feel like I've got a slight head start on the next 5 years of my life, you know what I mean, or something, because I've already done a lot of stuff. I've got a few things I wish I could go back and do with this brain, do you know what I mean? As in, including certain things where I wish I could be a bit more relaxed, maybe at certain points. I should have enjoyed things a bit more, perhaps. There are other times when I would have just gone, you know what, so feels bad now, but you'll never guess what's going to happen in a week, you know. So it was, I actually fully understand how all this music stuff works now, which is great. Actually, it's a bit great for my kind of production confidence as well, which is why I was thinking of doing these tutorial videos. But that's how Pioneer started, by the way, was because I remember that I didn't really know how the stuff worked, but it kept being there at every gig.
Yeah.
And when I actually learned how it all worked, it really transformed my stage presence and stuff, because all of a sudden I wasn't so nervous about stuff breaking. Because if it did, quite often I knew more about how the mixer worked than the engineer did. So if something was going wrong or something, I would just lean over it and unplug it and plug it back in. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was...
The amazing thing is there's so many, shall we say, upper level DJs that don't know how to do that. They go, if it stops or it does, and they're looking at you as if you introduce them on or whatever, and they come on, they do, and something goes wrong, you go.
Well, yeah, but I think everybody has a few. You need to have that happen a few times. I think that, there's a video. There's actually a video. It's Grey Hard. I wouldn't recommend looking it up. It's not that great. There's better videos to watch. But there is a video that someone's posted of a gig in I think it's in Melbourne when I was doing it's called Summer Field Days over there. And what's interesting about this little video is that they managed to, and this is just the way things go, but it just so happens that the video that gets posted up is when there was a power cut on the stage.
Right.
And it is funny, that one, that sort of scenario, because it's not your fault. Like, you're standing there and you're just trying to do the best you can and stuff like that, and you're a bit jet-lagged and you feel a bit miss home. But then there's a power cut. And what's funny was that it was such a drastic, that was obviously, I can't do anything about it. I think I just did some, I kind of went, thank you, Wembley, or something, you know what I mean? And after a few times, that's kind of, I just learned to laugh. And the thing is, as soon as, this is the funny thing about DJing, it's big crowds. You do end up, kind of conducting an audience or at least, kind of being an ensemble with the audience. And the thing is, as soon as the crowd sees that you're laughing, then it makes them laugh too, which is quite... That's why I often used to come out and do, somersaults or something after a gig, because I was quite happy about it. And then I realised people would relax a bit. Do you know what I mean? So you don't want everyone... That's what I said about the BPM thing. You don't want everyone really tense, being like... Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but...
Then I'm thinking, what am I going to do next?
Yeah, but the thing is, the difference in between playing to a crowd of crazed Japanese people or English people or German people, whatever, that what you did on that day, you played to 500, 600, 700 DJs who were not only watching what you were doing, but they were analysing what you were playing and... Mm-hmm. In their minds, majority of them were pulling it apart and saying, should that go there and that go? But you could see their little brains, including mine, going
little brains. Their righteous brains, their great brains. do you know what we will say about that? Well, I feel like we're spending a lot of time talking about that particular one. But I think what I will say, and this is actually why I would quite like to do, that's what I'm saying, I'm actually grateful to you, because I've had to actually set this up and check the mic is actually properly working, right? Sure. I tried this with my mum the other day, didn't work. I couldn't get the microphone working, we had to cancel the call. And by that time, it was my son's bedtime and we couldn't even retry it. So he forced me to do this, because I do really want to, talk about some of the things I've been learning with this tech stuff over the last year, but also talk about some DJ stuff and things, because one of the things I've always thought surprised me a bit, I guess, almost, is that, you're right, people do tend to do that, things like BPM. They were kind of studiously looking at everything I was doing. But I used to get quite surprised how often people were looking at the wrong thing. Like, if you really wanted to know the most complex thing about what I was actually doing, it wasn't what you thought it was at all. You know what I mean? As in, the easiest bit of DJing for me is the mixing. That's kind of the easiest bit. The hardest bit is, 40% of it is showmanship and it's the performance. But the other bit of it is that, I'm not just playing tunes. I mean, I've edited every single one of those tunes within their life. Do you know what I mean? Several times, auditioned them in my car. Do you know what I mean? Spun them out at different gigs and made a slight edit of it again. And therefore, one of the things I really like, and they say it's impossible to make a weekly radio show when I've got this habit of re-editing everything. But what it does do is it makes me learn the record. It makes me learn it. Yeah. And that's why I think I mentioned counting before, where I have, I can count things and I'll know when certain things are going to happen in a tune because of the way it feels. And it turns into a bit of a formula. And that, there's a lot of stuff, I'm being a bit elusive here, but that's the actual complicated bit. I think that's honestly the really complicated bit. Yeah. Which is, so it's kind of almost like sleight of hand, isn't it? But I'm talking about myself like I'm a magician. You know what I mean? I'm out of work has been DJ, ain't I?
Do you want me to play that video again from the start?
That's all right.
So, okay.
It's good, I thought. Hey, go on.
I love it. So, are you doing any more lockdown streams? Any more rest any more kisses tonight?
The streaming thing's a bit, I don't know, man. I do you know how much I put so much effort? I think you the video you showed there, that was the second from last one that I've done.
Yeah.
And one of the things I tried to, because you want to try and create, you want to do something that's a bit special and unique, didn't you? And so I started doing all these things with visual effects, which is why, I'm not sure if you can see this, but I've got this incredible computer over here now. Look, hang on. Can I turn this around? Look at that.
Oh,
that's
wow.
A computer. It looks like a spaceship. Do you know what I mean? Crazy. I love that thing. Which I had to get this custom overclocked PC build to help me with this video rendering stuff, because you think the music production stuff can be complicated. Anyway, the point was, I started doing all this stuff and I was really breaking my back doing it. And as I said, I had to, you do unfortunately have this thing now when, I'm such a positive player, I hate moaning, but it's never been harder to play music, on the internet. It's so difficult. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? I had a copyright strike, which I had to contact the senior people at SoundCloud about and stuff. And it took 4 weeks to sort this out, by the way. And it was a copyright strike for my own tune.
Yeah, yeah.
It was my own tune, but it'd been used on a compilation album from a different distributor. So so basically, in SoundCloud's head, they're kind of like, well, no, but you're not signed to this distributor. You don't have permission to pay. And I'm like, guys, do you know what I mean? It's by me. It's not, it doesn't feature anyone else. It's got no samples in it, nothing. Like, do you know what I mean? It was the most ridiculous thing ever. So, I do have a situation sometimes with DJ videos where I have to replay things sometimes, if you can believe that, which is quite, especially if it's something like the intro, because the thing is, you know that the intro is just bare and it's more lightly and you don't want it, you don't want that to, you know, it's just a bit of a slog. So I took a bit of a backseat, and then plus the fact that there's just no gigs, because there is an interaction. I mean, you do something online and then you go out and perform to people and you know, it's thrown us all a bit off, I think. It's a bit like, where am I, what am I doing? Which, as I said, I'm just starting to come out of now. I'm starting to come out of that who am I, what am I doing thing. You know, it's, I mean, listen, I love being a dad, but I love being a dad more when I'm not just a dad. Do you know what I mean?
It's interesting you should say about replaying stuff, because you mentioned at the beginning about that Prodigy track.
I hope I haven't spoilt it for anyone or anything. Like, maybe I'll end up on DJs complaining, but it's a real thing. Back in the day, you know, your DJing was about playing tunes, wasn't it? And I'd be absolutely chuffed if someone played one of my tunes. And it's difficult, man. How do you break through now? I mean, I think, why would you want to? I mean, if there's any budding DJs watching, go and get a job as an engineer or you know, doing something like that, you know, in these uncertain times. Maybe I'm just past it, but, you know, I do try, you know, I take care of things, you know what I mean?
Come the end of June, being a DJ is going to be the job to have, isn't it? It's just, you're just going to be working non-stop.
God, mate. You're wonderful, but that is a wonderful outlook on life. But
it is, though, isn't it?
You can't be serious when you're saying that, can you? Really?
If everything goes according to plan, and I have a big underlined if several hundred times, if it all works, then it will be like the 1920s all over again.
I mean, I'm not totally shooting you down. I think that the tension and anticipation that's been built up, I think... I mean, can you think about all the single people? Think about all the single people, right? My God. I spent a lot of years being single, but you talk about finding the right time to settle down and have a kid. My goodness. Especially if you've been single for the last year. What have you done? Nothing. What are you supposed to do? You can't even meet anyone. It must be terrible for your confidence and stuff. Like, and imagine how much everybody's changed in a year. Like how many friends they haven't seen. I reckon, I was saying to my partner this the other day, I was just saying, I wonder if it's going to become a thing, like it's going to become a hashtag or whatever, of like, you know, what I look, you know, 1 year later hashtag or something like that, of like what I look like now. Because a lot of people look quite different than now. I've met up with a few friends and they look quite different. Some people look fantastic. Some people, you know, look like a year's past.
So much grey hair. Grey hair is the thing that I've noticed, which is...
I've lost quite a lot of weight, which I know people sort of say that in a positive way, but I used to do a lot of, you know, training and stuff, and help with the nerves and the confidence and stuff like that. But I mean, you were just stuck in the house, and it's, do you know what I mean? It's not like you're going out anywhere, is it? I mean, mate, it's a funny time. I don't want to end up just complaining about the lockdown, because it's very easy to do. But it is funny. I saw a friend. I saw a friend on the street the other day, and it was funny. I hadn't seen him in ages, but the first thing he actually said was, "What is there to talk about?" And I thought, I'm so pleased he said that, because I thought it was just, you know, kind of me, and then maybe that has made me feel a bit more chipper, because now I've actually been concentrating more on, you know, maybe, okay, well, what can I talk about? I can talk about all this new music stuff I've got and stuff like that. So I thought it'd be quite cool. There you go. But I've got this genuine dilemma. I've got quite a few finished tunes now, but I don't know what to do with them. Don't forget, it costs money to put out records.
Of course it does, yeah.
And Lord knows you can't make any money anymore. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, hundreds of thousands. I'm just talking about at least it can pay for itself. Like,
one of the amazing things somebody was telling me the other day, they pay to play on other people's radio stations. Which blew my mind.
You know, I just think that's a bit of a shame, and I think whoever's making them do that
is just
not the song. Because whoever's making them do that doesn't care that much themselves.
Crazy. It's a pay to play is a massive, massive thing.
If you want to make loads of money or do something, like, get a different job, man.
Yeah,
like, I mean, if you want to be like a bit of a crook and a bit of a wheeler dealer, don't become, you know, just do something else. Like, it's perfectly easy to do something else. I think that's probably what a lot of people have done.
I would never.
But what it does mean is us that stay down the through line through this whole thing. Hopefully we'll all be able to, you know, chink our drinks together with face masks.
To play on our station. To play on Flashback would just be ridiculous. Why? Why would you want to do that? Crazy. Anyway, look.
Also, there's a quality issue as well, because now you can't control, there's no narrative of the station. There's no, like, sound of the station. You know, it just doesn't, I don't know. But,
yeah,
you know, you hear rumours about these things and stuff. I think, it's obviously terrible, isn't it? But as I said, it doesn't really make much sense to me because, do you know what I mean? Easier ways to make money, really, than scheming people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm going to wrap it up.
Just on that note.
No, you know what?
No worries, mate. That's all right. It's fine.
We've done 50 minutes.
I'm a talker. I am a talker. I can do my edges for ages. Too long, if anything.
I was aiming for 20.
No, you never get 20. Never get 20 minutes out of me, mate. Is that...
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, do me a deal, right?
Yeah,
when we're back rolling again and when everything is open, please come back on.
I'd love to, mate. Oh, it'd be a pleasure. It's great. I mean, you're a very charismatic chap yourself, and nice, cool. It's nice. Although, like, next time, maybe less compliments about my DJ and stuff, and we talk about some, I don't know, some other stuff or something like that. It'd be cool.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what it is, man. You're Kissy Salah. Remember that?
Yeah, I'm mostly dad now, but Kissy is, yeah, but I'm still me. It's one of the few things in my life that I'm pretty good at doing that. So it's a very specific thing, being, you know, being me, Kissy Salah, but it's cool. It's good. Mate, thanks for having me on the show. It's fantastic.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming on.
If I said anything too much nonsense.
No, it's good, man. And thank you to everybody for watching. Thank you to you, especially, for coming on. And we'll hopefully see you on the other side, and we'll get you back on, and we'll talk more about music, because there's stuff about your music I want to talk to you about. So
Do it, mate. I could talk forever about that stuff.
Yeah, man. Okay.
That would be great, though. Thank you very much.
I'd love it, man. I'd love it. Thank you so much, Kissy. It's been a pleasure. Mate. Good to meet you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Thank you. Kissy Salah, ladies and gentlemen. Man, oh, man, that guy's a legend. You know what? I bless him. I embarrassed him a little bit, I think, by bigging him up so much. But he's a legend. He is a legend. And I don't think he realises. Anyway, look, we got to go, because we're way over time. We're just how it is.